Good morning. This is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Friday, April the 1st. Welcome to another one-take reading of a blog post for my members only. Not quite a podcast yet. Still working on that. Still thinking about it. For now, the easiest way to deliver these files is just to put them in Dropbox. It's very primitive, but it works. It's efficient for now. So I'm going to stick with it for a little longer while I continue to look at the podcasting options. Today's post is called Jedi Pain Tricks Listed and Classified, the Taxonomy of Mind Over Pain Treatment. Sounds like a barrel of laughs. I could have called this one 36 Ways to Treat Pain with the Spooky Power of Your Mind. But that is not my style. I am more of a guy who likes spreadsheets than a guy trying to sell ad views on a blog. So you're gonna get the dorky version of a listicle. Many people are justifiably cynical about the power of the mind to treat chronic pain. Meanwhile, millions of other people carry on optimistically trying to treat pain with psychology in many, many ways, from meds to biofeedback to psychotherapy. This March, I got fascinated by trying to even just list them, about 36 and counting, and then by trying to classify them in some way. Today, I'm sharing my work in progress, the taxonomy of Jedi pain tricks. All of this is preparation for adding more about these topics to painscience.com, especially meditation and mindfulness, which is a glaring omission from my library of articles. So I will give you a big list of mind over pain treatment ideas, all the psychological, perceptual, mental approaches to treating pain, good or bad, popular or obscure, practical or exotic, everything that you can try to do to treat pain, like it's a problem that either comes from whatever's between your ears or at least tamed by it. I will also offer a way to organize and critically assess all of those ideas, the four main ways to treat pain, a way to start making sense of this mighty mess of claims. And that part is members only. This is my first members only post in quite a while, and it is a monster. This is a 2,500 word post, which is, you know, like five times the size that I usually publish. Lately, most posts have been running about 300 to 500 words, quite short. So for this one, I decided to write a lot. Make no mistake, this is a mess. In fact, every single one of these treatments is experimental. It's a rogues gallery of highly speculative methods supported by scientific evidence that is incomplete or unimpressive at best. But the point is not to judge them, it's to list them. And why a list exactly? Well, as already mentioned, I'm not much for the sensational listicle. I had entirely academic and scholarly reasons for being inspired to do this, as I tried to tackle some awkward scientific questions about deep breathing and relaxation. Stay tuned for more on that in future posts. I kept getting sucked into related subtopics. Psychotherapy, biofeedback, placebo, mirrors, virtual reality, repressed anger, Sarno. There's a prominent new paper about pain reprocessing therapy that I really need to write about. That's a mind over pain modality that got a huge boost from a maybe too good to be true study recently. So all of that was getting bewildering, and I decided it was time for a reboot of all of these related and overlapping topics. But you can't reboot what you can't even define. What is this category? What defines it? What's in it? Where are the edges? That's taxonomy. And I love taxonomy. I love the concept of taxonomy. My brain is very listy and very namey and very classify-y. So, taxonomy, listing, and listing turned into a project in itself. I asked folks on Facebook for ideas about this, crowdsourcing things to add to the list, and the response was overwhelming. Dozens of comments, ranging from the useful to the bizarre to the angry. Some people objected to the question itself, which took me off guard. Many were concerned that I was endorsing these treatments because they regard them all as rank quackery, or the opposite. There were people who chimed in who clearly think that they're all important and valuable pain treatment methods and were very concerned that I was going to diss them, which is, you know, fairly likely, knowing me. But I just wanted to list them. That was my only goal, and I was just asking for ideas for what should be on the list of things to think about and write about. So, mind over pain? Those words, quote, mind over pain, unquote, question mark? Why those words? There are a lot of possible and overlapping meanings of mind over pain, and it's not clear that those words are the best way to label this category. But it is also the best I've been able to come up with so far. They all have something to do with the role of the mind in helping people with pain. Psychological treatments didn't really work, even though it seems like probably the most obvious one. And it's because there's a bunch of things on the list that aren't really, you know, they don't really fit. They don't really match the description of psychology or psychological therapy. And the most obvious example of that is probably some of the neurohacks. Mirror therapy, for instance, isn't really about psychology. It's more about neurology. But it's also still very definitely a mind thing. So anyway, it was hard to come up with a label, and I finally just decided, mind over pain is as good as I'm going to get. Let's go with it. In the list, in the web version, I provided links and the newsletter. Links wherever I have related articles that cover these topics to some degree. There aren't many of them, though, and that's partly why I'm doing this, so I can decide what to write more about. All right, without any further ado, lots of ado so far, here's the list, the complete mind power list, all, maybe, of the approaches to mind over pain. And this list is very roughly in order of importance, as defined by popularity, mainstream acceptance, and scientific plausibility. Okay, here we go. First item, mainstream psychotherapeutic approaches, primarily cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, behavioral therapy, BT, and acceptance and commitment therapy, ACT. Notably, these are mainly about helping patients cope with pain, but there's also a hope that they could blunt pain more directly via other mind over pain mechanisms. Psychotherapy is much bigger than CBT, BT, and ACT, of course. For instance, there are many kinds of care for other mental health problems that can drive pain: anxiety, depression, addiction, insomnia, and probably more, although as the list continues, it gets, you know, a little more, the connection to pain gets a bit more tenuous, but you could certainly include things like obsessive compulsive disorder, phobias. So this must also then include complex pharmacotherapy with psychological goals, but especially anxiolytics and antidepressants. The idea that pain is caused by repressed emotions is so prevalent that it also belongs here. It's another popular psychotherapeutic goal, at least with patients. I'm not sure how popular that would be with mental health care professionals in 2022. Problem solving and goal setting, which are often the focus of occupational therapy. They're also all about coping and function rather than reducing pain directly. But again, the hope is that there are many spin-off benefits. Lifestyle medicine. This was a late addition. And by the way, I was still adding things to this list 20 minutes ago, you know, after a month of work. I think I added 4 this morning and 5 yesterday and changed a bunch of them. So it's still a work in progress. Lifestyle medicine was added this morning. That's the pursuit of overall health and fitness. It may be relevant to pain by reducing biological vulnerability. And that may require extensive psychological work, even a major mental makeover. This is mostly an unbranded improvisational self-help strategy, with a bunch of parts and a very roundabout mechanism of action, changing your mind to improve your health, to reduce your pain. This is why I didn't include it until the last minute, because it's kind of, you know, it's pretty amorphous. It's a, you know, it's a cloud of indirectly related strategies. And yet millions of people do exactly and mainly this. This is precisely how lots of people tackle their chronic pain on their own, instinctively, right from the start. You know, try to get healthier, and that involves all kinds of psychological components. I'm also going to pause here and fix a typo, which is a bonus prize for the first take strategy. I've got a repeated word here. Yes, and yet millions of people of people. I think saying of people once will do the job. Yeah, the one take thing is going to result in some edits. I always am changing posts right up to publication and right after publication. So it's going to be nearly impossible to get through these readings without some editing. And of course, if I try to get it to the point where it's polished enough to not have to stop and change a single typo, it'll never happen, because that's a very high bar. It would be very hard to do. So I'm going to pause every now and then and fix something. Next up is meditation, mindfulness, breathing exercises of many kinds, but mostly either slow or fast breathing approaches, relaxation, and stress reduction. All of these are similar and closely related and yet distinct, and I don't have a label for the subcategory. But I'm always troubled by how similar yet different these are. Like, breathing exercises are not the same thing as meditation. There's so much overlap, but they're not the same thing. Smartphone apps like Curable, Pathways, and Ouchie, those are three major examples. Those are now delivery systems for many of these approaches to pain. Especially the ones that I've listed so far, but also some of the ones below. These are so popular now that they deserve their own spot on the list. Cannabis, THC specifically, because it's the psychoactive one, CBD not being psychoactive. This is not usually thought of as primarily as a mind treatment, but that's probably how we should think about it. To the extent that it helps anyone with pain, its psychoactive effects are the most plausible active ingredient. And we got an it's with an apostrophe there that shouldn't be there. Fixed. These things, they jump out at you when you're reading aloud and not when you're staring at it. Back to cannabis. This is more obvious in the case of psilocybin and LSD, which are more trendy ways of trying to treat pain. Especially when it's suspected of being tangled up with other mental issues, especially trauma. Next is the major branded mind-body medicine approaches like Sarno's Mind Over Back Pain and Schubiner's Pain Reprocessing Therapy, the controversial Rehabilitation for Amplified Pain Syndromes, or RAPS, and many other programs it has inspired is extremely physical, but arguably it's almost entirely about the psychology. So a very physical program with a almost completely psychological purpose and intent. There's other gurus and brands of this type, of course, and I think probably the biggest one is Dean Ornish's stuff. But that's more about general health. That's a much broader medical theme. The ones I've mentioned here are the only major ones I can think of that are particularly focused on pain. And RAPS was a last second addition. I added that one, you know, minutes ago, almost right before starting this recording. It just popped into my head. Oh yeah, there's that one. So I'm sure there's more here. I've got to have missed something, and I hope someone writes to me and tells me what I've forgotten. Knowledge is power. So if the mind has power over pain, maybe the source of that power is knowledge. So in this subcategory, we've got simple education, which is just, you know, it's like in a trial of back pain where the control group gets an educational booklet. That's what I'm talking about, right? Like just basic back pain education to help people be, less uncertain and spooked by their pain. So really basic, just the basics, but making sure that people actually understand some basics, that's a legitimate intervention. But then there's, of course, it looms large. It dominates the category here. The much fancier pain neuroscience education, which is exemplified by Explain Pain. And that's a brand, capital E, capital P, Explain Pain. Most of my subscribers probably know that, but probably not everybody. And I'll finish up the category here with one of my own, with a term that I coined, the confidence cure. I started calling it that about a decade ago, which is basically just rational confidence building. And I discussed that at length in my back pain book. The next subcategory is neuropsychological hacks. A bunch of odd stuff in this one: virtual reality, mirror therapy, hypnotherapy, biofeedback, EMDR, maybe. I discuss a bunch of these in my article Mind Over Pain, though not enough. And then, of course, the king of this subcategory is placebo, which can be further subdivided into three: good old-fashioned fooling people with sugar pills and saline injections and so on. And two, the trendy idea of open-label placebo, which is, where you tell the patient this is a sugar pill, but it's going to cure you because placebo is amazing. And then third is the important concept of sensation-enhanced placebo, which I've written about quite recently. In fact, it was one of the first two recordings, this being the third, that I did. So that's an idea that's very fresh in my head. And I think that sensation-enhanced placebo is powering most manual therapy. It has a lot to do with why people like it and are satisfied customers, whether it's efficacious or not. This next category I still haven't come up with a name for. Distraction. Pursuit of pleasure and happiness, catharsis or venting, philosophy and spirituality, art therapy, music, writing, dance, painting, and so on. I don't know what to call this one, but much of it is under the umbrella of general personal growth, all the many ways that people try to get wiser, casting a very wide psychological net that might catch some pain relief. And personal growth is a topic that's, I've actually written an article about that, about how you can try to deal with pain or any mysterious medical problem by just generally making yourself into a project, making yourself into a better person. When there are no good medical answers, sometimes that's all people have. And I actually wrote about that a long time ago, probably 15 years ago is when I started writing about that. There are some therapies that involve some physicality or sensory input, but the active ingredient is probably mostly emotional and psychological. So very gentle massage, touch therapy, and spa treatments. Those are probably the only real contenders here. But there are much more obscure ones that exemplify the idea, like cuddle therapy, which, yes, actually is a thing. It's not a common thing, but you can find it. It's out there. I mentioned RAPS above. That's the very physical boot camp-like program for amplified pain syndrome. It's super physical, but the point is psychological. And there's probably more in this category, but those are some examples. Treating pain as a conditioned behavior is a specific hypothesis. There's not only some clues that pain might work this way, no proof, but good clues. There's clues, but also that it might be possible to disrupt that conditioning in a very neurohack way, like more neurology than psychology. This isn't a popular idea or an easy one to apply, but it is super interesting, and I have an article about that one. And the last item on the list, and the most obscure and the most hypothetical, but super duper psychological. There are some clues that pain can literally be forgotten. Amnesia might actually cure some kinds of pain. Inducing amnesia, obviously, that is not a treatment anyone is actually using for chronic pain, nor is it even a confirmed phenomenon. But if it was confirmed, It would be a really fascinating validation of some basic mind over pain principles. It would be a very profound demonstration of the role of psychology in pain. Phew, that's the list. That is really a lot of overlapping ideas. In the next section, we're about halfway through now, I will try to impose some order, a meaningful way to categorize these kinds of interventions. But let the brainstorming continue. The lists cannot possibly be done, not if I was working on it right before recording this. I have worked very hard on it, but I am confident it is still not complete. The four pillars of pain: cause, sensation, perception, and suffering. And also a typo, which I'm going to fix now. Got the wrong type of heading here. There we go. Now it's the right type of heading. Thank you for bearing with me as I edit and read. This is a framework for thinking about pain treatments that I've been musing about for ages. It's not specific to mind over pain treatments. This is just when it finally spilled out onto my keyboard. I think it was early last week, a couple weeks ago, as I tried to wrap my head around that increasingly bewildering list of mind over pain treatments. All of the treatments are attempts to treat pain in up to four ways, but mostly focused on one. First, remove the cause. Two, reduce the sensation. Three, tinker with perception. And or four, mitigate the suffering. You can't talk about any of these without considering the others. And one of the best examples of that is that if the cause of pain is mostly dysfunctional perception, then changing the perception would effectively remove its own cause. Mind blown. So not only do they overlap, but they are deeply conceptually entangled, these things. So these are the four places that you can attack pain in principle by any method, by any kind of pain treatment. But I'll be framing them in terms of mind over pain treatments. The perception being its own cause, the problem causing itself, sounds, if you fix that, kind of sounds like the holy grail of pain management. That is why it's the focus of my mind over pain article, and a really good example of why we need to consider all four kinds of intervention. Removing the cause of the pain, cure. Curing is the most difficult of all ways to treat pain, of course, but it is all you need if you can get it. Identifying and treating the source of pain is what most musculoskeletal and sports medicine aspires to, but also mostly falls short of achieving. Problems like back pain, fibromyalgia, and IBS usually have no known specific cause. Most mind over pain methods do not claim to cure. And there's another typo. I'm missing the word not. Supposed to say, do not claim to cure. There we go. They do not claim to cure, but some do, and probably because more definite medical cures are so hard to come by. So speculative ideas in medicine fill gaps. Wherever medicine can't provide the answers, stuff like this floods in. So inevitably, there are some methods that claim to actually cure pain by removing the cause. But to do that, they have to hypothesize a psychological cause that can be addressed with psychology. So they've got to somehow bridge the gap between psychology and pathology. They need a psychological cause of pain to cure. And many bridge that gap with stress, hypothesizing that stress and anxiety drive some basic physiological mechanism that is alleged to be the root cause of the problem. And the most notorious example of this has got to be Sarno's mind over back pain, where Sarno originally, I think this was back in the 80s, declared that stress and other toxic emotional baggage painfully chokes off blood supply to muscles, causing back pain. So if you solve the stress, you've solved the problem. It's incredibly simplistic. I mean, he just flat out said it. Stress makes you clench your blood vessels and cut off circulation. Okay, well, that's a claim that can be tested. Another major mind cure hope is that a lot of chronic pain is caused by dysfunctional or amplified perception, which sounds like something we might be able to tinker with. At its most conventional, this is just the idea that some pain may actually be all in the head, or more reasonably, just mostly in the head, a seed of pain truth embiggened by health anxiety, also known as, yes, this is what we're talking about, hypochondria. If so, the cure would be entirely or mostly psychotherapy for anxiety. To this day, I have no idea if there is actually any such thing as a chronic pain problem that is truly hypochondriac. That question is as thorny as they come. And how profound is that after so long doing this work that I can't tell you whether or not hypochondria is a cause of pain? Probably, maybe, I don't know. I don't know. I think it's one of the great puzzles in the field. And just a quick reminder, I'm still not endorsing or condemning any of these ideas here, despite a little snarky aside about Sarno back there a few moments ago. Mostly just still listing and classifying, talking about what people hope and believe and not whether or not it works. Next up is reducing the sensation of pain, which is analgesia or pain killing. Analgesia is the muting of alarm signals from the tissues, the attenuation of nociception, which is infamously difficult to do thoroughly, persistently, and safely. It's like cheap, good, and fast. You can't have all three. Most approaches to analgesia are neurobiological, pain meds, nerve blocks, anesthesia. Getting frozen at the dentist is probably the ultimate familiar example. Very safe and nearly perfect, but also transient and very localized. It might not seem at first like sensation has much to do with the mind, because we're talking about nerve impulses, sent brainward by insulted tissues. How's the mind going to stop that or change that? Well, if there is a connection, here's how it might work. Sensation is probably modulated by systemic inflammation, more sensation. And that, the systemic inflammation, roughly correlates with our overall health and fitness. If you're super duper out of shape, you're also probably more inflamed and probably producing more sensation in response to the same tissue insults as someone who hurts less. And then finally, if your physical health is thoroughly tangled up with your mental health, which obviously it is, then stress, anxiety, depression, and addiction, and more, all become major modifiable risk factors for being so unhealthy that you're more inflamed and therefore perhaps also more sensitive. Yoga is a perennial mind-body favorite that strongly leverages this idea. It seems like regular meditative exercise really ticks all those boxes. One-stop shopping for better mental and physical health. So you can really cover a lot of bases by registering for just one class. But the link between overall health and reducing sensation is tortuous and tenuous. And there are no shortcuts to better health anyway. Very, very few people take the yoga train from Burnout City all the way to Super Fitnessville. But the fact that people try is what's significant here. People try to reduce sensation by improving overall health. That's the lifestyle medicine thing. And it's not a bad idea. Yoga is just sort of the low-hanging fruit of that idea. It's the one that so many people, most people go for because it seems to promise that it will do it all. But there's lots and lots of ways to approach your overall health, and it's reasonable to hope in general that that would lead to a reduction in systemic inflammation and therefore sensation. So, very indirect analgesia, but analgesia, maybe. Reduce the perception of pain. So this is a problematic category, and I'm particularly inclined to say that and ad lib a bit here because just yesterday on Facebook, There was some shop talk with colleagues about fairly serious problems with this idea and what has been done with it over the last decade. Some of you listening might have even seen that conversation. Perception is what happens to pain after it's been pumped through all the complex filters of our brain. It's what we make of pain. It's the high-level psychological take on pain, how seriously the brain takes pain, what it means to us, and how loud and scary the sensation seems to us. And this is all based on very complex contextual clues in history. There's not really any doubt that perception has a role to play in pain. There's a lot of doubt about exactly how much it does. We know from some extreme examples that perception can be surprisingly powerful and that it can be modulated. So this creates the great hope that some chronic pain is dominated by dysfunctional perception. Pain is a disease in its own right, and if you can treat that, then you're effectively hacking away at the roots of the pain. But the big question is how much chronic pain actually works like that, and whether or not we actually have any more control over the perception of pain than we have over, say, a fear of heights, which is a great analogy, I think, because it's so obvious that a fear of heights is psychological, but also really hard to beat, very deep-rooted, and definitely not necessarily under our control. This is all, by the way, related to the idea of purely hypochondriac pain, but it's not quite the same thing. Perception amplified pain is not hypochondriac pain. Sensitization is not the same thing as hypochondria. The best known mind over pain idea that is mainly about changing perception is probably pain neuroscience education, or explain pain, which aims to reduce pain through boosting confidence that the danger indicated by pain might not be as real or as serious as it feels. But this is a large category, and many, many treatments target perception in a wide variety of ways, deliberately and accidentally. Placebo effects are probably the most conceptually pure and obvious example, where literally all you're doing is trying to change the perception of pain. You're not trying to remove the cause. You're not trying to reduce the amount of sensation. You're trying to tell the brain to believe that it's not a problem. And then that in turn, might release endogenous painkillers and become an analgesia, but the goal is to change someone's mind by fooling them or telling them specific things that will change what's between their ears, will change their beliefs and their ideas about the treatment. So yeah, that's placebo is really all about reducing the perception of pain. The last way that we can tackle pain is to reduce the suffering that comes with it. And this is usually just thought of as coping, which is improving our function and mood in spite of the pain. And that is the main focus of the conventional psychotherapeutic approaches to pain, chiefly cognitive behavioral therapy. That's the big one. Occupational therapy is also a major, major player here. But it also has a much more pragmatic emphasis, and people don't tend to think of it as a psychological therapy so much, although it really is. There's a lot of psychology in good occupational therapy. Perception and suffering overlap so much that at times they seem almost impossible to separate, very yin yang. In almost all cases, anything that targets one of them is hoping to achieve the other as a feedback effect. And there's a missing period. Still finding typos. And by the way, I've spared you the correction of several. In fact, I've been chiding myself as I go here that I really need to actually fix more of the things that I'm noticing as I go. But some of them have been a little bit too. There would have been too much typing. And if it's a really if it's a missing period, I can jam that in there in a second. But I've passed over several things where like, yeah, I need to reorder those words and. I didn't want to inflict the editing on you. I'm going to have to go back and edit more as soon as this is done. Here I am digressing right before the end. There's just one more paragraph in the post, and here it is. So achieving the other as a feedback effect, reducing the suffering to get a feedback effect on perception or vice versa. The goal of psychological therapy for pain is usually framed not as an attempt to treat pain directly, but to help people, quote, live a full life with confidence in managing that pain, end quote. That's from an article called Managing Chronic Pain in Adults. Despite that disclaimer, many a psychologist has suggested to their clients, to one degree or another, that better coping can actually lead to lower pain levels, maybe through reduced perception of pain, maybe even reduced sensation thanks to reducing stress and anxiety through the mechanism of less stress. And that, in turn, of course, makes it easier to cope. Wisely or not, mental health professionals do often aspire to treat pain indirectly via that virtuous cycle, to not just help people cope, but to help people cope so that it reduces the pain and back and forth. That's the aspiration. How much that actually happens, I don't think anybody knows, but that's the hope. And that's the end of this enormous post. 2,500 words and, I don't know, about half an hour of reading, something like that. I fixed at least 5 typos and noticed several other things that I'm going to have to correct before I publish this. Thanks very much for joining me. I hope you're still enjoying these. Once again, my apologies for the sort of janky manual audio delivery method. I will continue to work on that. See you next time. Take care.